43 years ago today, Jesus transformed my life, and I say, on with the revolution.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is 3 in the morning here in Malaysia. I am coming your way live. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Whole lot I want to talk to you about today, and I want to glorify the Lord who transformed my life so wonderfully 43 years ago today. First, let me mention this. Anything you want to talk to me about, any question you want to raise, any issue you want to discuss, I'm going to do my best to open the phone lines wide. 866-348-7884. Tomorrow, which is the beginning of my travel back from Singapore, God willing, we're going to have my dear friend Scott Volk hosting the broadcast. There'll be a special Hanukkah focus on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And then Friday, be answering your e-questions and getting into some great dialogue about cutting-edge theological and biblical issues. But I want to give you the opportunity to give me a call about anything under the sun that you want to raise to me, and I'll do my best to get to a bunch of calls. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, because I'm over here in Malaysia with a 13-hour time difference, I've really lost track of dates. I'm fairly convinced that it's Thursday morning here and therefore Wednesday afternoon in the States. But otherwise, I'm pretty confused about dates, and I wasn't even thinking today was the 17th. And get a note from one of our former staff members. She and her husband, still part of our spiritual family and team in many ways, although not working for us. Her physical birthday is December 17th, and my spiritual birthday, December 17th. She sent a happy birthday note, and that's when I realized, oh, it is the 17th. Now, it's possible that I had been born again before this day. It's possible, as God had been working in my life and I was seeking Him, that He had already forgiven me. And what I do know is this, that He was dealing with me deeply to bring me to repentance, that I had said I was not willing to follow Him. I believe Jesus had died for my sins. That light went on about 5 weeks earlier, November 12th of 1971, but I was actively, consciously refusing His lordship. No, no, I will not turn away from drugs. No, I will not stop shooting heroin and other drugs. And God began to deal with me. I didn't know it, but people were praying for me. I had no idea that they were praying. God began to make me miserable in my sins, brought me to deep repentance. And when His joy and love were revealed to me, December 17, 71, in the little Italian Pentecostal church in Queens, New York, I was granted supernatural repentance. I said to the Lord, I will never put a needle in my arm again. In fact, the image that I saw was so clear. I saw as if I had been covered in filth and dirt and mud from head to toe. And then that I had been washed clean with the blood of Jesus, and I was wearing these beautiful white robes, and I was going back and playing in the mud. And that's what God was showing me I was doing to the cross. And I said, God, I will never put a needle in my arm again. And from that day on, I was free. I found it harder to give up chocolate some months back than I found it hard to give up shooting heroin and other drugs. That's how deeply God worked in my life. And He put within my heart a call to be a world changer. I believe He's put that in each of our hearts as we follow Jesus. Some of us are more acutely conscious of it than others. And I want to talk to you about changing the world. Friends, I'm not discouraged with all hell breaking loose against us. I'm not discouraged with all the moral decline in our society, because Jesus is Lord. And because He continues to move forward with His work in the earth, I've got some shocking things to share with you today, but a lot of encouragement and your calls, 866-34-TRUTH.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire live from Malaysia, 866-34-TRUTH. The phone lines will be wide open today for just about any subject under the sun that you want to talk to me about. Glad to answer your questions, take your calls on a variety of subjects on this Wednesday. But we're focusing on the world. We're focusing on moral and cultural issues, as we normally do on Wednesdays on our Worldview Wednesday. 866-34-TRUTH. If you've been blessed by this radio broadcast, which comes your way, of course, free of charge 5 days a week, if you've been blessed by the hundreds of articles that we have written over the last couple of years, if you've been blessed by the many YouTube videos that we've put out and the thousands of hours of free materials that we have online, can I ask you to just do me a short favor? It'll take you 5 minutes, all right? When you have a break, as soon as you're able to do it, go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. And when you go there, click on latest video, all right? Can I ask you to do that? Just take you 5 minutes. It'll give you an update of what we're doing. It'll give you some exciting news about the scope of the ministry and lives we've been able to touch and let you know how you can be part of that and help, all right? So go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest video. Personal request from me to do it if we have been a blessing to you this year. Is that a fair exchange? 5 minutes of your time, and perhaps the Lord will challenge you to partner with us in other ways or inspire you in ways that we can make a difference together. I wrote an article yesterday that should be up on the WorldNet Daily website tonight. It's called Hollywood's Love-Hate Relationship with the Bible. And I point out there, it really makes no sense. Hollywood executives see that Bible-themed, faith-based themes films do well. So Hollywood execs decide to produce more of these inspirational films, reaching out to the faith-based community to come and see the new movies. But the movies they produce make a mockery of the very faith of the people they want to reach. What in the world is Hollywood thinking? And how in the world could Hollywood put out a movie on the Exodus and not have the greatest ever parting of the Red Sea? Yikes. According to what I've read, the Red Sea doesn't even part in the movie, nor did the director believe that that's what happened. You wonder, okay, why put it out then? One gentleman sent in his e-report, Chris Artson of Cruciform Media, and he said, a movie about Moses without the parting of the Red Sea? Come on. Why not take full advantage of the amazing technological advances now available in Hollywood, stick to the true biblical account, and make the best parting of the Red Sea ever seen? Other than the one seen by those when it actually happened, of course. Even on a secular level, folks are not happy with the Exodus movie. I was reading one review by, who was it, Drew McWeeny. I guess he's a film critic. If I was familiar with film critics, I'd probably be familiar with him. And he said this, only a great filmmaker could botch something as broad and archetypical as the Exodus story. And he said that the director, Ridley Scott, brings no insight at all to the story he's telling. He ladles on spectacle for the sake of it, and he manages to fumble what should have been the single most awe-inspiring sight of the year, the parting of the Red Sea. So here's even a secular critic pointing it out. As I say in the article, how in the world could you take one of the most supernatural stories in world history, make it so unsupernatural? How could you take such a massive story, redemption, and failed to capitalize on that very theme? And as a filmmaker, how could you miss the parting of the Red Sea? How could you not update Cecil B. DeMille? And by the way, if you say, well, look, the director's not obligated to go by what the Bible says, and they may have their own interpretation to put out, that's their business. That's their business. But you put out a movie like Noah that's offensive to people of faith in its departure from Scripture, and then you reach out to people of faith to go see the movie. That's what makes no sense to me. When the director, the gifted director of Noah himself, an atheist, says this is the most unbiblical, biblically based movie that's ever been made, you know, he makes that comment. Oh, it's an exact quote I just gave you. He makes that comment. And you're going to reach out to conservative Christians to go to the movie. That's what makes no sense to me. So I discuss that in the article. Before I go to the phones, while I was doing the show yesterday, a little bit later in the show, I noticed that a tweet had been sent to me that a debate had appeared on the Debate Out website. It's branded as News for Our Generation. I would say it would be news for the younger generation that is very much out on the fringe of sexuality and morality. I guess it would be mainstream for them, fringe for me. And there'll be debating issues that you might be surprised to see debated. And I would say a strong LGBT flavor as well. I was asked to participate in a debate, so I and others were interviewed, and then our comments were accurately put on the website, a Debate Out. So what was it that they asked me to debate? Why is it that I constantly talk about moral and cultural revolution? What is it that they wanted to discuss? And I was told, of course, this is a hot topic today. You say, well, same-sex so-called marriage? No, I mean, that I don't know that they consider that a hot topic. They'd consider that a given. Polyamory? Well, they've had some debates on that or different things posted on that. Multiple, quote, loving relationships under the same roof, different than polygamy because it's not a marital contract. No, it wasn't that. Say, what was it? Should consensual incest be legal? That was the subject for hot debate. They presented it very professionally, nicely done in terms of layout. They asked us good questions and got responses. Now, we're not debating each other. We're all responding to questions that were being asked to us independently. But there were five different people, including a professor, a psychoanalyst, others, five different people who were interviewed. I was the only one who said it should not be legal. Even those who had somewhat of a moral issue with it felt it was more important that everyone could choose what they wanted to do, and therefore consensual, in particular consensual adult incest, they said, should be legal. Four out of five. You say, well, those are the people they chose. I understand that. But the fact is those people represent many others and represent many in the younger generation. You say, well, what's the point of it? That's just crazy that, excuse me, the world is going in that direction. I understand. But we've been telling you this is the direction it was going to go. We've been telling you this is the direction that it had to go. Once you redefine marriage, once you say the marriage is the union of any two people, then you open up all kinds of other potential definitions. And if you're going to have, quote, equality for all, marriage equality for all, love is love, well, then why not adult consensual incest? And that's what a number of these people are actually saying. There is an article that, when did this come out? Came out December 4th by Tammy Nelson. She's a PhD. She's billed on the Huffington Post website as a sex and relationship expert, psychotherapist, author of The New Monogamy and Getting the Sex You Want, international speaker. She wrote an article entitled The Future of Marriage. She said the definition of marriage has changed dramatically over the past 10 years. And she said marriage up until now has had five main elements, one being married to one person, two marriages between a man and a woman. Three, marriage meant that you were partners for a lifetime. Four, marriage was a promise based on integrity as well as a legal contract. And five, marriage meant sexual fidelity to one person forever. She said, well, it's changing. All those things are changing on one level or another. And this is what she is predicting. She is predicting that in the future, marriage will be defined by shorter, more renewable contracts in five-year increments or smaller two-year contracts with options to renew. Just like you renew your driver's license, you renew your marriage contract. This is what she's predicting. In the future, gay marriage will have been legal for decades. More arrangements between couples will include open marriages with sexual agreements. Polyamory will be more common, and perhaps even polygamy will be visited in the legal system. She says more of us will be bisexual, transsexual, and even more sexually androgynous than ever before. More babies will be born without clear gender identity and will not have surgery to assign a sex, We will judge less on sexual identity and more on how we treat one another. I say, if society goes in that direction, and wouldn't surprise me at all if it did, based on how crazy other changes are, then it will mean such a decline and such a collapse that only those who follow biblical principles of marriage will really endure the storm. The crazier things are, the more that we lose the meaning of marriage and that we walk into a culture of sexual anarchy, the more hope that I have that people will wake up to reality and say, okay, we've got to go back to the foundations. We've got to go back to the basics. Your warnings were correct. Now, what do we do? Back to God's ways. 866-34-TRUTH. Right back with your calls.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. Remember, as soon as you get 5 minutes, please go to my website, AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest video. You'll be encouraged and blessed to see the scope of the work that God has allowed us to do, the lives that are being touched, and how you can help make a vital difference with us as we enter into 2015. 866-34-TRUTH. As I talk about what's happening in the world around us, remember, we are called to be the moral conscience of the society. We are called to be light shining in dark places. We are called to be those who set the captives free. We are called to be responsible stewards, which means that one day we'll stand before God and He'll ask us, what kind of world did we give to our children and to our grandchildren? And for those who say, well, you know, we're not supposed to get involved or the world's going to be the world, so we should have just let slave trade stay the way it was and not get involved, and we shouldn't stand up against the slaughter of the innocent in the womb today. Is that what you are saying? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's start today in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Paul, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, brother. How are you?
Doing very well, thanks.
Great. I used to deliver to you. I'm a FedEx guy. I used to deliver to you and Sid Ross and Paul Wilbur down in Gaithersburg.
Oh, amazing. All right. That's neat. 13-15 East Deer Park Drive in Gaithersburg.
Long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long. We were there from basically 87 to 96, but pretty much all together around 87 to 93, and then some of the guys were moving in different directions. But yeah, sure thing. Remember that well.
Yeah. Well, good to hear you're well. I just wondered, as a Messianic Jew, your adherence or not, your view on the dietary law. Present today?
Yes, there are differences within the Messianic movement about this. So I just represent my own view. I don't represent everyone. But my understanding is that we're under a new and better covenant, that we're not under the Sinai covenant, but the new covenant, that the new covenant repeats and reinforces a lot of what is written in the Sinai covenant. But many other things that would not be written in the Sinai covenant are now written on our hearts, now with the revelation of Jesus coming into the world. For example, to love one another as He's loved us can only be a command that comes once He's laid His life down on the cross. But as far as food laws, I don't eat pork. I don't eat shellfish. Pretty much all my life I never did. The only time it would have been an exception would have been if I had wonton soup that had pork in it, to be honest. But otherwise, I've just never eaten it, and I don't today. But it's not because I believe it's sin for me to do it in terms of I'm going to defile myself or become spiritually unclean. It's just something that I don't do, and it's also part of my solidarity with my people. From my understanding of the New Testament, the dietary laws were given to keep Israel separate from the nations. Now that we are one body, Jew and Gentile, together in the Messiah, the dietary laws would not have that purpose anymore. And although Jesus never advocated going out and eating unclean foods, he never broke the law, and his disciples didn't do that. In point of fact, he did explain in Matthew 15 and Mark 7 that what we eat doesn't defile us, and then goes from there and ministers to a Gentile woman. There's a lesson. In Acts 10, I don't believe that God was telling Peter to actually eat unclean food, but he was telling him that now he could go to the Gentiles. But then Paul addresses this in Romans 14 and 1 Corinthians 8, and I believe from the principles there, even as well as 1 Timothy 4, that we can see that what we eat doesn't defile us, and that if for the purposes of fellowship and ministry, we eat any of these foods, it's fine. But there are Messianic Jews that eat non-kosher foods freely. There are others who feel it's important for them to maintain solidarity with the Jewish people in that. But it's purely a matter of conscience in my view.
Yeah, not legalism.
No, but listen, we need to look at it. Many Christians think that if you don't eat pork, there's something wrong with you. And I've had friends of mine, Jewish believing friends, when they got saved, they were given a ham sandwich to see if they were really saved. That's just some of the ignorance of the church in that regard. So Gentiles, you know, they said we're free, and I've had Messianic Jews say, "Yeah, you're free to eat. We're free not to eat. Let's both accept our freedom." So blessings to you, Paul, and good talking to you.
God bless you, brother. Take care.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to, hang on, I just somehow just removed a window. We give you live play-by-play, moment-by-moment here. All right, I'm just getting my studio window opened up again here. Just give me a couple of seconds as we come your way live from Malaysia. I am heading back to the phones quickly. I am. Joey, the question on homosexuality, let us go there. Welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks so much for calling today. Yes, hello.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Hello, this is Andrew. Andrew from Ringwood, New Jersey.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Andrew.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was on the air.
No, it's my bad because I lost my screen as I'm here in Malaysia in the middle of the night. I lost my screen, so I could not introduce you by name. So we put you on the air and surprised you. But welcome to the program, Andrew.
Thank you very much. I listen to your show pretty much every day during work. I drive a truck for a living, and I have a lot of respect for your position and what you're doing. I will admit that a lot of your views do challenge me. I grew up a Christian, pretty far-right conservative Christian. I consider myself a little bit more moderate politically nowadays. But I listened to your show for the challenge. And I have a comment, kind of a question comment about homosexuality and the emphasis that it seems that the Christian right puts on homosexuality and what they call the redefinition of marriage. I understand why it is offensive to us as Christians. I understand that it is, of course, not biblical. What I don't understand, though, is that since homosexuality has been in existence for thousands of years, but as Christians, modern day, we talk about the redefinition of marriage. And for me, I know for me personally, no matter what my neighbors next door are doing, my definition of marriage is never going to change. Mm-hmm. My definition being the biblical definition. So when we talk about, you know, when the Christian right gets very up in arms about redefining marriage, and wanting to abolish the legalization of marriage, I wonder if, is that really the best approach to Bob and Steve, let's say, living next door, and we want to
let me just jump in, and I'm going to start my answer now, but I want to begin before the break that I have here. The short answer is, of course, we want to reach out to them. But this, when you redefine marriage, it has massive implications for all of society and for the coming generations and for religious liberties and freedoms. And if you redefine it, you make it meaningless.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. It is 3:30 in the morning here in Malaysia. I am accompanied by two faithful young brothers. They are here together, sitting in on the radio show with me in the middle of the night their time. So, past the middle of the night, I would say. But blessed to be here live from Malaysia. Tomorrow, Scott Volk will be guest hosting. I'll be in the very beginning of my travel back from Singapore. Scott's got a special Hanukkah broadcast on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday with some terrific guests. How he gets all these guests, I don't know. But you don't want to miss the broadcast, and I'll be answering your e-questions, God willing, on Friday, 866-34-TRUTH. So, Andrew, in Ringwood, New Jersey, back to you. There are a number of things. When you redefine marriage, it now has a sweeping effect through the entire society. It affects our laws. It affects our education system. It affects our liberties. So you have, for example, state after state after state, where Christians are being asked to violate their conscience, to do things they can't do with a good conscience, to comply with same-sex so-called weddings. You have curricula taught in the school to children. You have more and more challenges coming. You have people saying, okay, well, what about consenting relatives, consensitive siblings? Just discussed that debate I was asked to participate in. What about polygamy? What about polyamory? And on and on. So, when marriages and families are not healthy, the whole society is not healthy. The number one social welfare stability system for America is healthy marriages and families. You also have a situation where you bring kids into a world and guarantee that they won't have a mother or won't have a father. So the issue is not so much what Bob and Steve are doing next door. If Bob and Steve were a gay couple and lived next door to me, I'd reach out to them like everyone else. I would go out of my way to let them know that I care about them as individuals and be the best neighbor I knew how to them. And I'm not concerned with what they're doing in their room behind closed doors. That's between them and God, as long as they're not breaking the law. But when they now want to redefine marriage for society and have this incredible ripple effect on the entire nation, of course we have to stand. Listen, when you're involved in pro-life work, working against the slaughter of innocent babies in the womb, and you have a pro-abortion activist next door, that's going to offend that person. But you have to just do what's right. When we began to fight the battle against slavery in America, well, that offended a lot of pro-slavery Christians, and that offended a lot of slave traders and others. You can't worry about who's going to be offended. You have to do what's right. And this is not a battle that we started. In other words, we didn't go knocking on Bob and Steve's door and say, what are you doing and what kind of relationship do you have? It was live and let live. But when we now stand against the onslaught of a societal change, you know, we're told we're being unchristian. So that's why my whole philosophy, Andrew, has been reach out and resist. Reach out to the people with compassion, resist the agenda with courage. Many times we have gotten too politically involved. Many times we have made this more of a Republican versus Democrat issue as opposed to Kingdom of God versus Kingdom of the World issue. So I'm with you in that sensitivity. But otherwise, this is a massive issue being presented to us, and we're going to have to answer to God and answer to our kids and grandkids about this. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said the ultimate test of a moral society is the kind of world that it leaves to its children. And that's the question. What kind of world are we leaving to our children and grandchildren?
All right. Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah, and thank you for listening. Safe travels, 866-34-TRUTH. All right, I will be going right back to the phones on the other side of the break. Stay with us. Celebrating today 43 years of the mercy of God. Oh, there's plenty of mercy on my life before this, but this is the night that I know that Jesus became the Lord of my life. What a journey. What an amazing journey. And boy, am I absolutely sure the best is yet to come. Don't lose hope, friends. Jesus is Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Michael Brown coming your way live from Malaysia. So yesterday, woke up at 2:05 in the morning. I guess I went to sleep 10-something, maybe 10:30. Woke up at 2:05 in the morning to get ready for radio, and I was kind of groggy. And you know, when you first wake up, you may not be at your very best. And I thought, what are you doing, man? You need to be sleeping. You should be, what in the world are you doing? And then a couple minutes later, alive and well and alert and excited to be broadcasting. Same thing today, except I woke up a little bit better. I got up at 2:05, thought, okay, no problem. So here we are, my delight and joy. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the Bronx, New York. Jermaine, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yeah, hello. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Yeah, my comment is about the immigration executive order that President Obama signed into action.
Yeah.
A federal judge ruled that it was unconstitutional, and they're giving him a real hard time in reference to what he's trying to do for the immigrants here in this country. And I live in the Bronx, where there are a lot of immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
So nonetheless, doesn't the Bible say something about being hospitable to the immigrant and the stranger in your land? I mean,
not the one who came into your land illegally and violated your country's rules. No, this is about someone from another country who would find refuge in Israel, among the people of Israel, and live by the laws of Israel. Oh yeah, absolutely. I think all Americans are for that. The problem is, and this is just one aspect of the law that this particular judge ruled on, as I understand it, we should absolutely be doing whatever we can to help the legitimate alien, a person fleeing from some totalitarian regime or fleeing from torture, or they don't have freedom of conscience and things like that, and those who've come into America legally and we're trying to work into the system, or children of illegals, and the kids have been here for years and years and they're in our school system. We have to try to address that however we can. Unfortunately, in this regard, the president completely disregarded the process of getting this done in kind of a shocking way. And many believe that it was done completely for political motivation, with the goal of getting more Hispanic voters who would become Democratic voters. So that's where the real issues are, and probably there'll be other illegal things that have been discovered. So, Jermaine, I think you'd agree, if you want to fix a problem with immigrants, you do it legally, not illegally. So whoever it was, whether it be Clinton or Reagan or Bush or Obama, whoever it is, if they did something on their own that was illegal, then the courts should stop that. And what we need to do is try to figure out how to deal with these situations righteously. But the biblical language is not talking about someone who breaks the laws and then violates the code of a country and then says, okay, now give me refuge here just because I'd rather work in your country than mine. If you look in Mexico, for example, the laws for illegal immigrants and the penalties for immigrants are unbelievably strict. And I talked to a leading pastor in Mexico with a very large church right on the border of Texas, and I asked him how he felt about illegal immigrants. He said, listen, in order to leave Mexico and go into the States, you have to break law after law after law after law, and that's outrageous. So his position was very strict against it. This is as a pastor in Mexico. By all means, we have compassion and we do what we can to incorporate legitimate immigrants into our country and culture, which I think we do pretty well. And then we have to find ways to get rid of red tape and help where people are being hurt. But to open the floodgates of illegal immigration, I don't think that really helps at all. But thank you, sir, for the call. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. God bless you, dear brother. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Arlington, Virginia. Eduardo, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I'm a little nervous, but I really have something on my heart that I've really been needing to discuss with somebody. I think you're pretty qualified to pretty much give me some advice on. I have my wife. I made my wife, which she grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Mm-hmm.
And when I married her, obviously I knew that about her. She's not a practicing Seventh-day Adventist, but her family, her entire family and her culture, which she's known, has been around the Seventh-day Adventist and the emphasis on the Sabbath. Me, I am not a Seventh-day Adventist. I was in the military, and I gave my life to the Lord in the military. I've seen different chaplains. I've seen a Seventh-day Adventist chaplain, a Protestant, Pentecostal, Methodist, et cetera, et cetera. I understand, you know, the belief in that, you know, keeping the Sabbath is important. I wanted to get your perspective because I feel like she's putting a barrier on her heart when I ask her to come to church with me on Sunday, and anything related to the Sunday believing Christian and the practice of going to church, she just feels like is completely against God's rules. And I really strongly believe that it's making a great barrier between us, and yeah, her coming to know the, you know, the grace of the Lord Jesus. And I've tried to explain it to her, but sometimes I feel like maybe I need a different angle or something.
Sure.
So I was wondering if you can give me your advice, being that you're, you know, a Jew that was converted. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and one thing, normally as Jewish followers of Jesus, we don't even use the word convert because that would imply that we're no longer Jews, so we speak of Jewish followers of Jesus. Just for your info there. There's nothing wrong with setting apart the seventh day as the Sabbath. In other words, there's nothing in the Bible that says you can't do it or you shouldn't do it. But the seventh-day Sabbath was given specifically to Israel and was never commanded for the church as a whole in the New Testament. God never laid that on the Gentile church and said, you must observe the Seventh-day Sabbath. That's where I would respectfully differ very strongly with Seventh-day Adventists that say that everyone is commanded to put aside the Seventh-day Sabbath. What we do know is that early on in church history, believers began to gather either Sunday morning or Sunday night after their work day to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. So what I would first present to her is listen, we're not changing the Sabbath. If you want Saturday to be Sabbath for you, you feel that's important, fine. We're not changing the Sabbath when we go to church on Sunday. We're celebrating the resurrection of Jesus. When did Jesus rise from the dead? Well, she knows what the scriptures say, I assume. You know, he rose Sunday morning. So we are going to gather with others to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. We're not changing the Sabbath. That's the first thing. Now, if Sunday's Sabbath for you and Saturday's Sabbath for her, then that makes life a little more challenging. But I'd also take her to Colossians, the second chapter. Read through Colossians chapter 2, where Paul gives a warning. And in the warning, he says, don't let anyone judge you based on Sabbaths, meaning seventh-day Sabbath observance, or the observance of a new moon. Don't let anyone judge you. And the pressure was that the Colossians were getting involved in some different beliefs with some different groups, and one at least seemed to put that emphasis on, we're going to judge your spirituality by Sabbath observance and by keeping the new moons and special days. And Paul said, don't let anyone judge you based on that. And then he says this, that the Sabbath is the shadow, the substance is Christ. So what you want to point out to her is that the substance is Jesus, not the shadow. He also says in Matthew 11:28, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. So Jesus brings to us the fullness of Sabbath rest, and it's not in a day, it's in a person, and it's in a spiritual relationship. So I would say, look, the New Testament tells us plainly, not to make an issue about the day, especially for Gentile believers. The New Testament tells us that the substance is found in Jesus. The New Testament tells us that we find rest in Him, and we're simply gathering to celebrate His resurrection. Hopefully, those truths can help her and give her more freedom, so she doesn't feel she's sinning against God if she attends a Sunday church service with you. Now, look, there are many. I have friends, Gentile friends, who are part of Messianic congregations because they love worshiping on Saturday Sabbath and etc. But they understand it's not a binding commandment. Hey, Eduardo, got to run. If you go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, and search for the word Sabbath, you'll also find more material that would help. God bless you, and may His Spirit bring unity in your household.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, just one more reminder to please check out my latest video. It'll share with you what we're doing in ministry. It will give you an idea of where we're going and how you can be part of that. It's just 5 minutes long. You'll be blessed by it, and I would really appreciate it if you take a moment to watch it. So go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, when you've got a 5 minute break, and click on latest video. All right, back to the phones, 866-34-TRUTH. We'll go to Sacramento, California. Adrian, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, greetings. I'm actually a cousin of Dave Papabisi, one of your grads, the missionary. I know you know him personally.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, Dave and his family are tremendous people serving in northern Iraq right now. Great.
Yeah, it's really amazing. But I have a simple question because I don't want to take up a lot of your time, but I was just wondering, the first part is, like, what are the main foundational or non-compromised essential foundations of the biblical, a biblical church? You know, like, basically, because my question is, when do you know, like, when to move on? And this would be, like, in the context of, like, legalism and tradition. And one of my main concerns is that, like, outside of it's a traditional Pentecostal church, but outside of the services on Tuesday and Sunday, there's really no, as a general rule, there's no relationship or doing life together outside of the church context during the week.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, well, in that regard, Adrian, This is not so much a matter of what is required as much as what should be a life extension of the body. And and for those that find their spiritual needs met by going to two services a week and praying together and worshiping together, and then they go out and they try to touch the world and live how they live, etc., and they're good with that, and they've got their friendships and relationships, great. But for those who really want to build communion, certainly there was much more life experience together in the New Testament church. Then it's a matter of not trying to change that congregation and make them different as much as to say, hey, I really need a place where I can really plug in, where I can really serve and be served, where our families can grow together, where there can be fellowship. If, in fact, we are called to have fellowship and be in fellowship, then that would mean relationship building. That would mean time spent together. You know, in terms of requirements for the body, they're the basic doctrinal foundations and moral foundations that we live by. And that would separate the true church from a cult or a sect or something like that. But if it's a group that just by their lifestyle and tradition doesn't do much life together outside of a couple of services a week, then that's the kind of thing with respect and honor. You say, hey, we really need to go to another place so that we can really be involved with family life. We feel it's important to have small groups. We feel it's important to build relationships together. And that's just a matter of personal conviction and personal choice in that regard. And you could say, hey, as I read Scripture, I see that it's very important.
Right. Okay. And related to that, would it be, because in the context of this community, I think even if you do gatherings outside of the local church, like prayer meetings or Bible studies outside of the church, they feel like a lot of times, like almost like it's a threat, or like you're trying to
step out and plant another church or something like that. They almost like they're really somewhat against it. They don't, you know,
right, right, in their minds, everything has to come in that sense from the senior leadership down and be overseen in that way. The best thing to do is to honor their views and not right. to fight it, not to go against the grain, but to honor and bless and then find a place where there is more expression, there is more body life, there is more liberty. You don't want to get in a conflict about it if that's who they are and that's how the leaders lead. You want to honor that. But by all means, I've been in environments like that, and it can be very stifling. And then others are very much at home with it. So that's what you have to work out. By the way, I think in late February, I'm doing a series of meetings in Sacramento. So we'll let folks know as that happens. Hey, God bless you, Adrian.
No idea. Thank you. Okay, Michael.
All right. Sure thing. 866-34-TRUTH. Tom in Brockton, Massachusetts. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Good afternoon. I just wanted to share that I'm among some of the Patriots who try to give their support in 3 or 2 months in advance, and I encourage other people to do so as well. Your show is certainly a blessing.
Well, thank you so much, Tom. I really appreciate the solidarity and the support.
You're most welcome. God bless. My question is, Dr. Brown, my soon-to-be 16-year-old daughter, she wants to go to a secular artist concert. She wants for her birthday. But I'm comfortable with that. I would like if you could share your personal views on it, but also give me some scriptural references where I can check, because I don't want to be the bad cat in this part of her 16th birthday, but I'm very uncomfortable with it.
Right. May I ask who the secular artist is?
Yes, it's a Chris Brown show that's going to be in the Boston area.
Okay. So here's how I would approach it. On the one hand, there are many verses that tell us not to partake in works of darkness. If you read through Ephesians 5, the first 16 verses, for example, if you read through 2 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning verse 14, there are many verses that talk about separation from the world and not partaking in the entertainment or the lifestyle of the ungodly. That's one side of things. On the other side, we can't completely leave this world. We're in the world, but we're not of the world. So every day we're going to be working with fornicators, with adulterers, with others, and we build relationships and seek to reach out. If I knew personally that the concert itself would be sinful and defiling, in other words, if there'd be all types of profanity, sexual references, a very unclean atmosphere, then in no way could I, in good conscience, take a family member and go to that concert, because it would be a defiling, unclean atmosphere. At the same time, if you go to a ball game, if you take your family to a Boston Red Sox game, that's a secular organization, you'll be giving them money for secular purposes. If you go to a football game, you got the cheerleaders there, you know, you got a lot of violence in the game, you know, so you could raise questions like that. But to me, I would do whatever I could to show solidarity to my daughter and to spend time with her and to let her understand that, you know, I care about her and affirm her, etc., unless it meant being in an environment that was actively sinful. And if that was the case, then under no circumstances would I be able to partake. Hey, listen, Tom, I am out of time, but hopefully that would be guidelines for you. And I would have to say, hey, listen, we do have certain values that we live by in the family. But if I could do something with her and have an enjoyable family time and make her feel special without sinning in the process and the environment, I would do that. All right, friends, my bottom line today, you have been put in this world. We have one shot at it only. Live your life. Count in the light of eternity. 43 years ago today, Jesus transformed my life, and I say, on with the revolution.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It began when two gentlemen came into my bakery and asked me to decorate a cake for them. And so I replied, I'll make you your birthday cakes, your shower cakes, all your cookies and brownies. I just don't do cakes for same-sex play.
That is the voice of Jack Phillips, Masterpiece Cakes. He has been serving his community for many years, and as a Christian, there are things that he doesn't do. He doesn't do Halloween-type stuff. He served the gay and lesbian community for years, but he doesn't bake cakes, use his creative talents to bake a cake for something he doesn't believe is right in God's sight. And because of that, the state, oh yes, the state is coming against him. This is Michael Brown coming away live from Malaysia. It is now 4:01 in the morning in Malaysia, but we are alive and well. And we have said for years, although some thought it was an extreme statement, we have said for years that gay activism is the principal threat to freedom of religion, speech, and conscience. And while we as Christians say that Jesus died for all people alike, shed the same blood for all people alike, while we on every level treat every human being with civility and respect, we still expect to be able to live by our freedoms of conscience and speech. And joining us right now on the Line of Fire, Jack Phillips himself, you just heard his voice, and attorney Nicole Martin from the Alliance Defending Freedom. Jack and Nicole, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jack, when you initially told this couple that you couldn't bake a cake for them, did you expect to be in the middle of a national whirlwind and a national case over freedom of religion? Did you realize it was going to explode like this?
No, I had no idea. It was just another instance of a cake that doesn't fall in our menu. Like you said, I don't do Halloween cakes and stuff. And so there are cakes that we have to turn down frequently.
Give me an example of some other kinds of cakes that you, as a Christian individual, have said, no, we don't do that.
Like you said, the Halloween cakes, witches, ghouls, that kind of stuff in general. Copyright stuff, people bring you copyright issues, and it's illegal to duplicate them without the permission of the owner, so you have to turn those away.
Right. So, Jack, what has now happened to you since then? When did you find out that you were being taken to court over this?
The two men came into the bakery in July of 2012, and it was like September or October that I first heard from the state. So 2 years ago.
All right. And what is the state now requiring of you?
The state is requiring me that I change my policy and I start making cakes for homosexual weddings, that I retrain my staff, and that I report to the Civil Rights Commission quarterly for 2 years on my progress.
So basically, right, just the re-education camp kind of thing, just in a little different form.
Yeah.
Nicole, serving as Jack's attorney, Nicole, are you working directly with the ADF?
Yes, I am.
All right. We've got a short break coming up. When we come back, I want to try to probe this issue with you. Find out why Christians across America need to look at these questions. And then I want to play the devil's advocate for a moment. I want to challenge this position. So we will be right back with Jack Phillips of Masterpiece Cakes and his attorney, Nicole Martin of the Alliance Defending Freedom. Friends, this is happening with increasing frequency across the country.
Fire we please. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Writing 2 days ago, New York Times, Michael Paulson has an article about Jack Phillips in this very case. It's called Can't Have Your Cake, Gays Are Told, and a Rights Battle Rises. The article says, in Colorado, where Mr. Phillips, 58, owns and operates a small bakery called Masterpiece Cake Shop, the state's Civil Rights Commission determined that Mr. Phillips had violated a state law banning discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation in places of public accommodation. The commission ordered Mr. Phillips to retrain all of his employees, who include his 87-year-old mother, and to produce a quarterly report detailing any refusals to bake. In response, he has stopped accepting orders for any wedding cakes while he appeals the ruling to the state courts. Jack Phillips and attorney Nicole Martin are with me on the line right now. Nicole, how common is this situation now? Or is there more than one case like this that we're being confronted with in America?
There is indeed. Americans will now face what can only be characterized as an onslaught of erotic liberty with religious liberty cases. And what we're finding, unfortunately, is that sexual and erotic liberty trump religious liberty. It is the new favored status, and all others must bow to erotic liberty and the proponent of those rights, if you could even characterize them as rights.
All right. So if, for example, someone went to an Orthodox Jewish caterer and said, we want you to cater our event and we'll be serving pork, no one would expect the Orthodox Jewish caterer, or say a Muslim caterer for that matter, to say, oh, sorry, we'll trash our religious beliefs and we'll go ahead and do this. Or let's say they ask the Orthodox Jewish photographer, you know, we need you to do our wedding, but it's on a Saturday. Well, that's the Sabbath for me. And yet somehow in this case, we're being told that religious beliefs don't matter. Where did we get this mindset from? How did suddenly sexual desires, romantic attractions trump religious freedoms when religious freedoms are the very foundation of our country?
Well, that is the larger question, and I think it starts with and has its roots in a PC culture, politically correct culture that we are living in, where it has become abhorrent to ever offend or hurt someone's feelings. So as you can imagine, that creates a consistent conflict between various people's rights, because we are indeed a very diverse nation with a multitude of different beliefs and traditions and values. And so what may offend one person doesn't necessarily offend the next. But when the overriding goal is to create a society and a culture free of offense, this is what will happen, this collision that Jack is facing, and the photographers in New Mexico, Elaine Photography, the florist in Washington, the cake shop out of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
We will see this, and it will continue to plague all of those in the wedding industry. It is going to start affecting lawyers and the kinds of cases that lawyers must take. Judges, clerks, it's a real problem.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
You know, it's important to keep in mind that this case is not about the young men who came into Jack's shop. It's about the message that they asked Jack to create with his talents and his gifts. And that's the overriding issue at stake. With all of these cases that I just described, the message that is being demanded of these artists,
right,
that they must violate their conscience, their very soul, the very thing that makes them an artist, that's what's at stake in this case.
So in other words, Jack, if two men came in. They were out and proud, gay. They were holding hands. They came in and they said, they pointed to one of them. It's Joe's birthday next week, and we want the very best birthday cake that you can make. You'd make that cake with no problem, correct?
Yeah, that's what I do.
Right. So serving gays, lesbians, cookies for, you know, what if they had adopted a child and they were having a birthday party for that child? Would you make a birthday cake for the kid?
I certainly would. It's not the child's fault that he's being deprived of a mother or a father.
Got it. All right. So the issue is then when you now have to have, okay, congratulations, Bob and Bob, or make a cake and you've got two little figurines of two men kissing or something like that. Now you are participating in something that fundamentally violates your faith. So when you make a wedding cake, what goes into that?
There's a lot that goes into it, not just, you know, the baking of the cake, but we always sit down with the bride and try and determine what the, you know, atmosphere of the wedding will be, what she wants, the colors. Just I ask them where they met, you know, and try and get a good feel for who she is and what she wants her wedding to be like, so that I can do the best job that I can to make her very special day be what
right.
she anticipated all her life.
Yeah, and you know, if you had, say, the case with Elaine Photography in New Mexico, your photographer, you're posing couples. Okay, here's, we just want you to be hugging here, need a little kiss here. So you're, mm-hmm. you'd be in this case with Elaine Photography posing two women and kissing and so on. So in your case, you really get involved with your customers. So Nicole, back to you. You do well, of course, to point out what's actually involved here. But let me play the devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. What if this was in the days of, well, it's post-segregation era, and I'm a white baker, and a black couple comes in, they want to get married. Let's say an interracial couple, they want to get married, and I am a white supremacist. I'm a white supremacist, and I say, I'm not going to bake you a cake. Should I be allowed to do that? Shouldn't the courts be able to tell me that I'm now discriminating and I'm not allowed to do that?
Well, you know, you raise a very good point, but again, if that baker isn't just a baker, he's not just baking bread and widgets. I think we can all agree that a wedding cake is qualitatively different than a box of cookies. It carries its own expressive symbolic message, and because it carries an expressive symbolic message, it is entitled to First Amendment protection under the U.S. Constitution. And I think we can agree that it's an iconic symbol of marriage. For hundreds of years, it has stood as an iconic symbol of marriage with spiritual, emotional, and significant cultural ramifications. So if that white supremacist cake artist does not want to express a message that is inconsistent with his conscience, the government has no business forcing him to speak when he wishes to remain silent.
All right, so let the consequences be what they are in the community, but the government doesn't have the power to enforce that. Now, Alan Sears, who's the leader of the Alliance Defending Freedom, I read in the same New York Times report that a photographer they were doing a Christmas picture for Alan Sears and his family. When they found out who he was, they refused to do it. And he said, that's their business. That's their right. Theodore Schubert recently contacted 13 bakeries that were either all gay or gay affirming and said, hey, listen, I'm going to be doing, we're having a celebration of traditional marriage, and we want cakes baked or cookies with, and we want it inscribed saying gay marriage is wrong. 13 out of 13 refused him. I mean, ultimately, this is where things are going. And are you going to say now that they all have to be taken to court for refusing and they don't have the right
yeah.
to refuse? So it just opens this crazy Pandora's box. So, Nicole, where do you see this heading?
Well, I think we're about to embark on a long journey to find out whether freedom has a future in America. I mean, certainly, Doctor, if a government that tells you what you can't say is bad enough, but a government that tells you what you must say is a government we should all fear. This case and the litany of others like it and the ones that will follow is about whether the government can punish Jack for refusing to express a view he disagrees with.
Got it.
Got
to jump in. We're out of time. Thank you, Nicole, for what you're doing. Jack, we are absolutely standing with you. And your simple stand to do what it's right is speaking across the nation. Be strong, brother. There are more with you than against you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, so it's 4:20 in the morning here in Malaysia. We've got one more morning of ministry. So what about five hours from now, 5 hours and 10 minutes from now is when I'm supposed to start my next teaching session. It's got a couple more sessions to go, and then we drive back to Singapore, and then very, very, very early the next morning, scheduled to fly back from Singapore to the States. Thanks for your prayer support on this trip. My dear friend and colleague Scott Volk will be hosting Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast tomorrow with a Hanukkah focus and with some very special Messianic Jewish guests and leaders, so you don't want to miss the broadcast. And then Friday, I plan to be answering your e-questions, maybe some social media posted questions as well. All right, I want to open the phones to any subject you want to raise with me, any question you want to raise, anything you want to dispute with me, clarify with me, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I mentioned in the first hour that I barely know what day of the week it is because of the time changes and broadcasting back in the States. So it's early Thursday. Yeah. Early Thursday morning, it is early Thursday morning here in Malaysia. I'm 13 hours ahead, but Wednesday afternoon in the States as we broadcast live. And I had to be reminded that this was December 17th, 43 years ago. That was the night when, overwhelmed by the love and goodness of God and deeply convicted of my sin, I told the Lord, I will never put a needle in my arm again. That was the night of surrender. That was the night when I acted on what I knew was right. God had opened my heart about 5 weeks earlier for the first time to believe that Jesus really died for my sins and rose from the dead, but I was not willing to live for him. I was not willing to serve him. I was not willing to have him as my Lord, and there was an intense battle for my soul over the next 5 weeks, and as God's grace prevailed in me, I was wonderfully and gloriously delivered. So it is my official spiritual birthday. And 43 years, on the one hand, it sounds like a long time, but it's been an amazing journey, and I am very, very excited about what is to come. May I ask you to take 5 minutes of your time, if you're blessed by these daily radio broadcasts, if you're blessed by the articles, the hundreds of articles we've been able to write in recent years, if you're blessed by the materials we've put out, the many YouTube videos, the free debates we've put online, the books that we've produced. If you've been blessed by all this, can I ask you to take 5 minutes of your time, as soon as you have 5 minutes, all right, and go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest video. We've put a special video together for you that'll let you know the scope, and really even then it's just a glimpse of the scope of what we're able to do, and by God's grace, the impact we are able to make around America, around the world. And we'll let you know how you can be part of it. It's an exciting video. You'll enjoy watching it. Just 5 minutes long. So can I ask you to do that? Personal favor, 866-34-TRUTH. I have a question I want to ask you, a question I want to put forward to you. The terrible, terrible news of the slaughter of children in a school in Pakistan yesterday when I woke up at 2 in the morning to get ready for radio yesterday, looked at my emails and saw that absolutely terrible story, which was still breaking. One quote, I can't verify this, is that this was done in protest of the Nobel Prize that went to the young Pakistani woman who had been shot by Pakistani Taliban as she advocated for the education of women. And I mean, it makes it even all the more sick, but it's demented, it's horrific, no matter how you analyze it, no matter what the cause. As you, the discussion, the description, I should say, of piles of children's bodies, over 130 piles of children's bodies drenched in blood as Taliban just came in and started shooting indiscriminately. Then I just saw a report today of more than 150 women, that have been executed by ISIS. These were women who were taken captive. They refused to marry the terrorists. So ISIS has executed 150 of them, buried them in mass graves, according to a report in the Turkish press. So here's a question that is being raised. Here's a question. Let's say that you captured one of these terrorists, all right? Let's say you captured an ISIS terrorist who had already beheaded people with his own hands and had slaughtered people and had shot innocent victims in the head, killed them, had killed children, all right? Or you had captured one of these Pakistani Taliban who slaughtered children, some as young as 10, in cold blood. Let's say that they were going to carry out another act next week. You knew for sure that they were going to carry out another act next week, another act of terror, and they were going to slaughter children in your own community. You didn't know how they were going to do it, where they were going to do it, but your own kids were at risk. The kids in your community were at risk. And you had apprehended one of the terrorists and were trying to get information out of that person. Would it be wrong to waterboard them? Would it be wrong to inflict severe pain on them in order to stop the slaughter of your own children or your neighbor's children? These are discussions that are being had now in light of the Senate report, which, by the way, as much as we're appalled at many of the torture reports, the fact is the report was a total slanted report hit piece that wouldn't even allow the CIA to testify and discuss these issues. It was a one-sided hit piece. So as much as I was appalled to read some of it, just like many of you were, let's just remember it was not a balanced report, nor did it give the full scope of any success that may have come out of this or lives that may have been saved. But there's an article by Brett Stevens in the Wall Street Journal. He says, I am not sorry the CIA waterboarded. The article says, Dick Cheney says he would do it again in a minute. He's right. Brett Stevens says, I am not sorry Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the operational mastermind of 9/11, was waterboarded 183 times. KSM also murdered Wall Street Journal reporter Danny Pearl in 2002. He boasted about it. I decapitated with my blessed right hand the head of the American Jew, he said after his capture. And Brett Stevens is saying, if we can get information that will stop the taking of other lives, if we can get information that will stop others from being slaughtered, we ought to do it. If you knew that a nuclear bomb was planted in your city and would take hundreds of thousands of innocent lives unless it was located and removed, and you had to torture someone to get that information to save those hundreds of thousands of lives, would you do it? These are real questions that have to be asked in the real world. By the way, President Bush canceled a visit to a Swiss charity gala over fears that he could be arrested on torture charge. That's accurate report.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is 4:30 in the morning. I'm here in Malaysia sitting with two young men who have gotten up in the middle of the night to keep me company. They make sure that nobody else comes into the business lounge here in the hotel, which is kind of unlikely at this hour of the morning. They turn the fan on during our two-minute breaks to cool the room a little bit and then turn it back off, lest you hear a fan in the background. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Anything you want to talk to me about, any question you want to raise, I will take some calls in the last half hour of the broadcast. Another news update for you. No surprise, New York Times reports that for the sixth straight year, the fertility rate, the birth rate in America is declining. According to the report, the general fertility rate in the United States, the average number of babies women from 15 to 44 bear over their lifetime, dropped to a record low last year to 1.86 babies, well below the 2.1 needed for a stable population. By the way, if not for the immigrant population over the years, the birth rate would be even lower. This has been a problem around the world in quite a few nations. Now, in the Muslim world, it's quite the opposite. You have a very, very high birth rate. Right now, in many Muslim countries, you have a disproportionately large percentage of children under 15 that brings a lot of social ferment to society when you have a massively high birth rate than that. But it is safe long-term for the society because you have generations that are being raised up that then can care for the older generation and support the older generation. But when you dip below the 2.1 babies born by a woman from the age of 15 to 44, when you dip below that, it makes for a very, very unstable long-term future for a society. And you have countries from Russia to Japan to Italy where the birth rate is precariously low. In the Orthodox Jewish community, it's very high. In many conservative Christian parts of the world, in Africa and Latin America, it's fairly high. But in many other parts of the world, it's strikingly low. It's part of the de-emphasis on the importance of marriage. It's part on the de-emphasis on the importance of children and family. People waiting longer and longer, people having less children. The more couples have kids out of wedlock, it's another statement of the lack of importance of marriage and family. And even as we redefine marriage, it's being redefined in ways that have less and less emphasis on bringing children into the world. Mark Stein wrote about this in his book, America Alone. And it's quite a major issue. You say, but won't this solve overpopulation, etc.? Overpopulation is not the issue. There's adequate food supply in the world. There's distribution of food that's important. There are places where there's limited space and population concerns are an issue. But for most of the world, that's not the case. But as things are going, we will have a population decrease, not increase. So here's what happened. Let's just look at something like Social Security. Where does the money come from for Social Security? You say, well, that's just been put in a bank account for me by the government. No, it comes from the younger generation paying into it. When you are in different parts of the world, either the Social Security system or the system of the younger family supporting the elder, that is a mechanism that now allows people to age and be cared for by the society. But when you don't have that, you begin to have massive social breakdown and deterioration. No country has sustained a birth rate well below 2.1 per woman over the course of their lifetime. No society has dropped well below that for decades and decades and decades and sustained itself as a society. Another wake-up call that marriage, family, having kids, more important than we realize.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you, coming away live from Malaysia. And special guest host Scott Volk tomorrow for Thoroughly Jewish Thursday with some great Messianic Jewish guests that'll be joining him on the air. A special Hanukkah broadcast. You'll be blessed by that. And that'll be the beginning of my travel back from Singapore. So Scott will be hosting for me. And then, God willing, Friday I'll be answering your e-questions and different questions that have been sent in to us. And anyway, we do everything we can to come your way live because being on the air with you on radio is priority for us and a great joy of my life. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Delaware, Ohio. Jason, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, great stuff as usual, brother. I really appreciate your ministry. I've grown so much on Calvinism, and or as an Armenian myself, I've grown so much. And just every time I listen, if I miss a program, I try to go back and just get really built up. I really appreciate your equipping the saints. And really appreciate it, brother.
Well, thank you.
I have a quick question and a quick comment. My first question is, I'm sure you've had it before. I'm a minister, just a simple street evangelist and little ministries here and there. And I have a question about Psalms 137, verse 9. I listened to William Lake Craig and his teaching on the other difficult passages of the Old Testament dealing with the genocide, supposed genocide that God ordered the children of Israel. My question, though, on Psalms, I've never had someone ask me, is on verse 9, it says in the NIV anyway, of course you know the Hebrew, and it talks about the Edomites, and the person there, that the author of this Psalm 137, verse 9 says, you know, Lord, remember... In verse 7, O Lord, remember the Edomites, what they did the day Jerusalem fell. And then skip down to verse 9. He who seizes your infant, the Edomite infant, in context, and dashes them against the rocks. I've never had a skeptic on the street bring that up yet, but I want to be ready. So, and then a quick comment you said a couple days ago, you know, why does Hollywood produce these Exodus movies and they're so, you know, they don't stick with the biblical text? Just a quick comment there, and you might have already mentioned this, but something came to my heart. They're probably trying to convert people either directly or indirectly into unbelief. Just my thoughts on that. So I can take my answer off the air.
All right, great. But thank you again for the kind words. Much appreciated, Jason. With regard to your second comment, I have an article that'll be out tonight, WorldNet Daily website. So if you go to my website a little later tonight after 8 Eastern Standard, it's normally posted. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest article tonight. It's on Hollywood's love-hate affair with the Bible. And I know that there are gifted screenwriters and producers and directors who don't believe in God, don't believe in Scripture, and they're going to put their own, this is their artistic expression, they're going to put their own twist on a biblical account, and maybe they want to convince people or say, hey, the Bible says this, but I don't believe it. Hey, that's their business if they want to, and then Christians stay away from it. That's their business. Perfectly fine. you know, they can do what they want to do. We're not like radical Muslims that say if you draw a picture of Muhammad, we're going to behead you or something like that. So they can do what they want to do. We can say we object to it. We're not going to go. But the problem is when they put out a movie like Noah and then they reach out to the faith-based community, you know, to watch this great movie. It's like, hang on, it's made by an atheist who said it's about the most unbiblical, biblically themed movie that's ever been made. So that's what I don't get. What are they thinking? And they're going to try to reach out to the faith-based community and smash their faith in the meantime. All right, Psalm 137, and this probably is the most extreme passage in Scripture. And it's ultimately speaking about Babylon, and it does say, I'm just looking at the Hebrew text now, it does say what it's translated to say. Rather than blessed, you might want to translate with truly happy. In verse 9, truly happy is the one that grabs hold of and smashes your little ones on the rock. Little ones, obviously speaking of children. How could that possibly be sanctioned by God? Actually, it's not being sanctioned by God. That's the first thing. The psalmist is simply making a statement that the one who carries out these horrific acts of violence against Babylon, which has destroyed and bereaved so many, that that person will be considered truly happy doing it. So it is making that statement. It's saying whoever gets to carry out this vengeful act against you who have destroyed so many, what you've done is going to be done back to you, so that those that carry out these horrific acts against you will be considered truly happy. That's what's being said. It's saying that's how bad and ugly and horrific it's going to be, that the people who carry these acts out will be considered truly happy. It doesn't use the word Baruch, which would be blessed by God, but rather Ashrei, as in Psalm 1, truly happy is the man who lives a certain way. So that's the first thing. All right. It is simply saying there is going to be such horrific vengeance against you for what you've done. You have destroyed so many lives. You have killed so many children. You have bereaved so many mothers and fathers. This is going to be done to you. And the one that gets to pay you back for what you did will be truly happy. That word Ashrei again found in verse 8. All that being said, C.S. Lewis and others have taught that there are expressions in the Psalms that are ungodly expressions and that do not live up to the law of the Messiah. So, for example, Psalm 139, the psalmist says, I hate those who hate you with a perfect hatred. And then he also says, search my heart. See if there's anything wrong there. Now, some would say that he's saying, God, I'm righteous. I hate what you hate, and I hate evildoers just the way you do. Search my heart and see how right I am with you. Others say he's saying, these are my feelings, but search my heart to see if they are godly feelings. So I would say that if an unbeliever that's really challenged you on this, and of course it's a very difficult verse in that respect, it's not one that you're going to be going around quoting in your evangelism or in your discipleship class, but it is part of the Bible. Either it is simply making a pronouncement that the one who does these horrific things to you, just as you did to others, will be considered truly happy and blessed in what they're doing, or it is possible that this is an angry sentiment expressed by the psalmist, just as the psalmist would sometimes express grief and, you know, are you going to forsake me forever, and so on and so forth. And you say that we examine these sentiments by the rest of the scripture, and the Old and the New Testament tell us if our enemy's hungry, we should feed him. If our enemy's thirsty, we should give him something to drink. We should overcome evil with good, and therefore we look at the rest of the scriptures. Thank you, though, for the question and the kind words. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Gastonia, North Carolina. Jim, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown, for accepting my call. And I want to respond to your question about waterboarding and any other, torture-type techniques for the terrorists. And, what country do we live in? We live in the United States of America, and it seems to me this administration is too soft on these kind of people. I mean, to me, somebody that is a danger to our country and to our people, and have already caused beheadings of children and even of Americans. And any technique that could prevent future torture and killings of many people is necessary. I can't believe our country, this administration, especially the Democrats and the leftists who support abortion, killing so many millions of babies, they support that, but want to prosecute the CIA because they want to use torture techniques to give information that could save lives. That's absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah, Jim, I'm sure you speak for many in expressing that. And obviously, we want to feel that we have a certain moral ethic that's superior to other nations. We want to feel that we're honorable. We want to feel that we treat prisoners of war or captured terrorists or others in a way that is civil. You know, we talk about cruel and unusual punishment within our own laws and things like that. But there are real questions to face. Justice Antonin Scalia, I believe, raised that issue and said, hey, look, these are not just abstract concepts that we're talking about. So I wonder what would happen if, let's say, the people that issued that report from Congress, Senator Feinstein and others, if it was their own family members that were going to potentially be all burned alive, some absolutely horrific thing like that, and if some severe pressure was put on someone that had been captured that was privy to what was happening and could save the lives of those children, wouldn't they want it done? Not easy questions to raise, but Jim, I do appreciate you weighing in loud and clear. 866-34-TRUTH.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us live from Malaysia. Come on, you got to admit, this really is cool. Here I'm in India a few days ago, broadcasting live from India. So I've got my radio unit. Let's see, if I lay my palm on the unit, that's just about the length of it from one end to the other, and the width as well. It's much thicker than that. But that's what I travel with. It's a portable unit. We hook up a cable connection to it, hook up headphones, and then my mic, and it's just as if we're in our studio. And the amazing thing is, I mean, I'm going from here, so Malaysia, which is a long way from home, okay? I'm going from here to our studio in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where everything is engineered. From Winston-Salem, North Carolina, it then goes to Dallas, Texas. From there, it goes out on national satellite, and we're having a conversation as if we're sitting right next to each other. I had some fun, was it beginning of this? No, last week, I was getting some emails from our younger daughter. She and her husband and kids live right near us, and she was asking me some questions on behalf of Nancy. And I said, are you mom's secretary now? She said, no, she's driving. I'm in the car with her and the kids. So I had a little conversation, just updated them on life because Nancy and I hadn't talked. We were emailing back and forth earlier in the day. So I just gave an update, and I'd been a little sick, kind of gave an update on that, what was going on. So we just got a shout out to the kids. It's just, it is amazing. What a blessing. What a joy. 866-34-TRUTH. Please do go to my website. Just a personal request on my behalf. If we've been a blessing to you through the radio broadcast, through the articles, through the resources we put out, videos and other materials, can I ask you for 5 minutes of your time? Would you be willing to do that? Go to the website, ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest video. Watch the video there. See the scope of the work that we're doing and how you can be part of it. Because friends, together, we're making a difference. I'm here in Singapore, Malaysia, but with a church from Singapore. And the Hyper Grace message is tremendously influential right now in Singapore. And we've been able to teach on that. My book on Hyper Grace, By God's Grace, is really making an impact. Issues having to do with gay activism and can you be gay and Christian? These are pressing major issues right here in Singapore. One gentleman that was talking with me yesterday said that he's reading article after article in Singapore media that is pro-gay activists. The most recent one he read a couple of weeks ago was how gender is a social construct. So, friends, the issues we're addressing are critically important issues around the world. And yet, how do we reach out to those that we differ with compassion and the love and grace of God? So you're helping us. You're holding my hands up as we are here. Just got a note from a Messianic Jewish leader, absolutely thrilled with videos that we've been producing that we're going to be blasting out to the Jewish world. Just got a report about the blessing that they have been to his congregation. And there are young men in Israel who've put out a series of really well done videos, Hebrew speakers, native Israelis, reaching Jewish people with the good news of the Messiah and answering objections. They wanted me to know about it. It's getting a lot of attention already. And they wanted me to know that they put these series together based on my five volumes of Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus. So The work is getting out. By God's grace, we're making a difference. But it's a joint effort. It's a team effort. And we do need your support. So go to the website. Watch the video. You'll be blessed by the video. And perhaps the Lord will speak to you, or your own heart will prompt you to stand with us with a one-time gift or becoming a monthly supporter. Let's go to London, Ontario, in Canada. Joe, we just need your help on this. Sergio, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. It's talking to you, especially you being in Asia.
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I just wanted to make a comment on the not the last question, but one before, where he was asking how do we answer skeptics when we talk about God asking to destroy the Amorites and those people.
Yes.
I wanted to point that person to Greg Cole, Stand to Reason. He has a great article answering the problem. But I also want to add to it, sometimes people that are skeptic, they're not really interested on the answer, but they just are going to try to give you questions like that. And sometimes the best way to answer a question is just ask them questions before you answer them. Then you realize if the person is really interested or just trying to mock you, because we do see a lot with atheists and skeptics. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and in point of fact, right, there are answers we could give that won't satisfy because someone's not really looking for an answer. And one of my friends was talking to someone who was mocking their beliefs and mocking their beliefs in heaven and hell and challenging them on it. And the guy said, well, if I was able to answer your question, would that change your viewpoint? He goes, no, of course not. So that is true, that often that's the case. What we have to recognize is that there are valid questions, of course, that people do raise, and we want to do our best to be able to answer them. When it comes to the slaughter of the Canaanites, it's also important to remember that God had Abram, that God waited about 400 years until the wickedness was at a certain level. It was also essential that the people of Israel were preserved as a nation so the Messiah could come through them and bring redemption to the world. If Israel had mingled with the Canaanites, there would have been the destruction of Israel. That would have been the end of the people of Israel. That would have been the end of salvation for the human race. But even so, God would not allow it to happen for about 400 years until the wickedness reached a certain level. Nancy said to me the other day, what if the Canaanites were like ISIS and those were the ones being destroyed? Well, God waited enough time until wickedness reached a certain level. But Sergio, your comment is well taken. Appreciate it. Let's go to Lancaster, Texas. We're real short on time, but I saw it's my buddy Charles. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I called you a couple of weeks ago and we ran out of time, kind of like today, the end of the show.
But, yeah, you got a call earlier in the program, buddy.
No, well, it's on my schedule.
I understand.
So the question was on, we were talking about the Hebrew word asham, and based upon yes. Psalm 40, verse 68, my question is, pointing to Jesus as kind of filling in the gap of verses 6 through 8 of Psalm 40, they contrast the four out of the five major sacrifices, but they don't point out the asham. That one's kind of left out. And then Hebrews 10 quotes that. And then also, just on communal sacrifice for Israel, there was no communal asham, but the other four sacrifices there were. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. You know, we talked about Isaiah 53, you know, 53 verse 10,
got it.
How the servant is an asham. So do you
right,
see
tell
that
you what, yeah, let me just jump in. Charles, what I'd suggest is that you write out this question and shoot it in, and I will answer it at greater length on a Thursday so that we can get into it in a bit more depth, because I know your questions are always penetrating. So let's do that. Hey, friends, I got to run. I'm out of time. My bottom line today is this. 43 years ago, Jesus changed my life, and I'm looking forward, not backward.